that talking in the town square, in the taverns and the shops. I hear them talking everywhere, that talking never stops. But all their words of wisdom won't make you go away. The day they close the factory down, I had nothing left.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Interesting editorial by the folks at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And I just want to read the beginning of it because it's, you know, it's on this trade issue, on the tariffs. It is the most spot on. It's like I could have said it every day for the last 13 years on this program, as I think I have. They point out that, quote, people who are bloviating about the coming trade war with China are blind to 2 points. First is that the trade war is already engaged. It's been going on for 25 years. China has been waging a trade war against this country for that long, and the U.S. has tried passivity and non-resistance. It's also tried playing nice. This brings us to point two. It is time for our country to fight this war and try to win. They point out that this is what Donald Trump, the president, has declared we must do. And if you live in Pittsburgh or Cleveland or Toledo or Youngstown or the Mon Valley or Johnstown or Lima, Ohio or Lorain or Zanesville, unless you've been living under a rock, you think it's high time. And look, I grew up in Cleveland. I watched deindustrialization happen right before my very eyes. There was a powerful manufacturing base when I was a kid. You could go up and down Brook Park Road, and there were hundreds of small little factories feeding into the Chevy and the Ford plant. The Ford plant's mostly gone. And all of those feeder plants, long, long gone. So for me, these tariffs are about time. And here to share some of his thoughts and push back against some of the attacks that we're seeing, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you.
So, you know, I look at this and look, like I said, I grew up in the 70s and, you know, I remember a powerful industrial base. And all the jobs that were here. And I remember, you know, the 80s and the 90s, all that stuff disappearing.
Yeah. I mean, this has been going on for a while. It is rare to see an editorial like the one in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that supports a trade enforcement action. But here we are. And I will say, and I hope your listeners know this, I have been very critical of Donald Trump in a number of different ways. I think on the trade policy and on the enforcement actions and the tariffs, particularly on steel, aluminum, to try to protect our intellectual property, I think he's on the right track. And I think he actually has some very competent folks at the helm of his administration, the U.S. Trade Ambassador Bob Lighthizer. I think Wilbur Ross is also a really good set of ears and eyes on what's happening with industries like steel, and they'll help to guide the administration through this. And this is hard because it's not the typical kind of partisan resistance kind of issue that breaks down really evenly along political lines. But I'll just say these three things very quickly, and then we can move our conversation along. First of all, we're at the very beginning of this process, and a lot of these tariff announcements that you're seeing are lists, and they'll be negotiated. And we have a long way to go to see what's going to happen. And the markets are going up and down, and soybean prices are going up and down. All of it is speculation because not much of this has really even taken effect yet. The second thing is that I think we do need to watch the Trump administration as this proceeds, because on the one hand, it's given a lot of favors away to Wall Street. The tax bill is a good example of that. Certainly hasn't been friendly towards workers on regulation. And so I think that we need to explore that. And then number three, and finally, I think that we have to understand that this action is long overdue, that tariffs in a lot of ways are a last resort, and that this is the inevitable consequence of a couple of decades of neglect. And I think that Democrats and Republicans both share some blame for that.
Absolutely.
With respect to our trade relationship with China or Mexico, And so there's a lot that's still going to be unfolding, but we have to kind of separate this from just the reflexive politics that say anything that Trump does, I'm automatically against. Because that, I think when it comes to trade, you know, it might be unfortunate to admit this politically, but he certainly seems to be on the right track more so than Hillary Clinton was, more so than Obama was, certainly more so than Bill Clinton was. Bernie Sanders probably would have been doing a lot of the same things, and you would have heard howls from the business community. And so we have to take this for what it is. Look at the policy, critique it, and help guide the president forward on this.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, because you know, the people who are not attacking the president right now, you know, on the right, are probably the people who, if Bernie Sanders would have become president and pursued this policy, would have been the most vocal opponents of it. And I find it interesting, because you're right, it's almost come down on team sport levels. But, you know, some of the Democrats that I've talked to come down on the Hillary side a little bit. And also the elite side. I mean, when you're talking about the higher educated folks, and this is why I think the Democrats have lost a good portion of the white working class of this country, because, you know, this almost fetish with low prices has cost us jobs and cost communities their identity.
Yeah, it has. And I think that, you know, if you read the headlines, like the top level headlines in the New York Times or CNN or MSNBC, you're going to miss digging into the story, and I think that's really important here to understand what this is and what this isn't. First, you know, these are trade authorities that every president has had, that they've been able to deploy if they've wanted to do it. Trump said he was going to do this way back during the campaign in 2016, and so it shouldn't be surprising that he has, and it's actually – these are actions that folks like Senator Casey, Senator Brown from Ohio, other Democrats have been calling for many years. The second thing is that, you know, all this rhetoric about a trade war, which is interesting to me because I guess it makes a great headline, Rick, but, you know, it's actually a lot more boring than that. You know, what happens, and let's separate steel and aluminum out here for a second, is that, you know, we do need a level playing field. China has been gaming the system that's spilled over into other countries, and the tariffs could actually work. You know, we're seeing some workers being called back in Ohio, in Illinois, in Minnesota, in some other places, and that's going to continue. I think the collateral cost to the U.S. economy will be very minimal. And for people who are like, well, Miller Coors is going to, you know, have to raise the price of their beer cans because of the aluminum tariffs, they're missing a couple of key points here. First of all, if they do raise the price of aluminum on the beer can and pass it all along to the consumer, it's a grand total of about a penny and a half per six pack. And that's if they choose to pass along the costs. People should also remember, and particularly Democrats who are opposing this, Miller Coors just got an enormous windfall from the tax cut. And so the idea that they're somehow this poor, poor company that needs our support that's being attacked by the president is a little ridiculous. So this strategy could work. We have a lot of things to still work out. There's a lot of negotiations that still have to happen. But this is a last resort. And it's long overdue.
Right. And the other part of this is, you know, this none of this stuff may actually take effect. This is part of negotiations. And this is where I keep trying to tell my friends that, you know, don't get the hair on fire just yet. I know Wall Street's on the roller coaster ride, and you know, I don't follow the daily ups and downs. And I've talked about this all week. You know, when Jamie Dimon and, you know, Goldman Sachs are standing on the ledge ready to jump, I'll start worrying about Wall Street. But until then, the daily up and downs just means a supercomputer is making a lot of money for rich people.
That's exactly right, because most of these tariffs haven't taken effect yet. The steel industry itself, if you're going to look at the actual impact of this, and then if there are retaliatory tariffs, it is such a small part of our overall economy. You're talking a total of maybe, you know, $9 billion in costs on a $20 trillion economy, that, you know, there are, you know, interest rate changes of 0.25%. have a bigger impact than that on jobs and wages and everything else that we hold near and dear. But this, you also see, I think the elite kind of newspapers take advantage of the fact that there is this resistance against Trump. And believe me, on most issues, I'm a big part of it too, and I know you are, to try to shape public opinion against him. But then you look at what voters actually say, Republicans and Democrats in some of these districts, are like, you know what? I kind of like the idea of pushing back against China. It's been way too long.
Way too long.
Since we've done that. Yeah.
No, I'm right there with you. And the other side of this is, and the conversation that we're not getting, I don't think enough of, is you look at the kind of tariffs that the Chinese put on our goods going into their country, and you look at the massive, I mean, enormous deficit that we have in trade with them. At some point, you've got to go, I'm going to defend my lunch at least. I mean, the kid every day who goes to school and gets his lunch bag taken eventually has to stand up. And I think we're at that moment.
Right. Yeah. And it's not initiating a trade war. I completely agree with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and the sentiment that you have laid out, which is we're finally engaging in this trade enforcement. It's been long overdue. And it does come as such a surprise because that hasn't been the policy of the U.S. government for the last couple of decades. And so it does seem quite shocking. And certainly the markets don't like it because they like certainty, right? They like certainty, and they've been able to game the system. It's like, okay, we can exploit China's workforce. We can ship products back here. That works really awesomely for our shareholders. It doesn't work so well for jobs and wages in the United States.
Yep.
And so anything that's going to start to break down that system is going to cause a little bit of resistance. But what the president needs right now is for folks to say, particularly in the Congress, that, look, we need to do more of this, not less of this. We need to be smart about it, but we need to do more of this, not less of it. We cannot cannot recoil in the face of this pressure, because the signal that sends to countries like Russia, China, and other trade violators is that, again, the door will be open to the U.S. economy, and there won't be any consequences for cheating or violating trade agreements. But there's a long way to go,
right, too.
And we have to work out deals with the Europeans, with Japan, on NAFTA. We're at the very beginning of the process, and not even towards the middle or the end of it. There's a lot of work that still has to be done.
You know, and one of the things that I try and get, my friends to understand is that you look at, autos, for instance. China has a 25% import tariff on U.S. automobiles going into China. And I think we have, a very small 2-3% that comes into the U.S. Evidently, Buick has, I think it's Buick, they're building the Envision. The idea was to build that in China and then ship it back to the U.S. If we, put the tariffs right where China has their tariffs on us, if we're even, if we're on a level playing field, that doesn't happen. And for me, it's I've always been a believer of domestic production for domestic consumption. And we trade for the things that we can't make. And it's my view that there's very little that in this country we cannot make.
Right. I agree. I would even take it one step farther. Look, if there's a really free market out there, and we can't do it as well. Our workers aren't as productive. Our entrepreneurs aren't as imaginative. Our business executives aren't as savvy as the other guy. And there's no government interference. There's no exploitation of workers. There's no exploitation of the environment. Then, we lose out in the competition. We have to figure out a way to make ourselves better and stronger and more competitive. But that is not what's happening here.
Yeah, let me go to the stable and get my pink fluffy unicorn, and we'll get to that place.
Right.
Because it doesn't exist.
Right. We know how to make autos. We know how to do this. We know how to make airplanes. Our farmers know how to grow soybeans. We know how to do this really, really well, really efficiently. But when the other governments intervene to prop up their guys to keep our products out or to steal our intellectual property, or to have that asymmetrical tariff like they do on cars coming into China, then, there's no way we're going to be able to win in that equation, no matter how competitive we are. Yeah. It's about time. I mean, this is one thing that I think the president has done well. I wish he would have started it last year, rather than this year. But the process has started, and I can certainly nitpick about things that I would have done a little bit differently. But I think that we need to get our lawmakers to say we need more of this, not less. I mean, you know, the free trade deals, Trump was right about Korea. It was a terrible deal. We should have never done it. NAFTA, a terrible deal. It has to be renegotiated. So we'll be watching to see how that proceeds. But it's about time we started having these conversations.
Yeah. And to be honest, candidate Obama was right on that as well. He ran on in 2008, renegotiating NAFTA. In fact, I sat 20 feet from him. And when he said, you can trust me, we're not going to pass Panama, Colombia, or Corus. And eventually we passed Panama, Colombia, and Corus, and they were bad deals.
Yeah. There's always been this disconnect between the rhetoric on the campaign trail and then what happens once a president gets to office. And believe me, that's been true when it applies to President Trump as well. He said he was going to name China as a currency manipulator. He hasn't done that. He hadn't done it twice, and he probably won't do it again this month.
Right.
He said he was going to do a lot of things, and I'm glad he's not doing some of those things, believe me. But on trade, he made some very specific promises, and he's far from meeting all of those, Rick. But this is one area where you and I both know a lot of folks who listened to his rhetoric who said, okay, all right, I on the trade stuff, I totally get it. And we shouldn't hold it against the policy because it's coming from a particular individual. But we have to understand when we're trying to elect good progressive candidates that they ought to be saying on trade policy, we need to be doing more of this. We need to be doing it smartly. And we need to be protecting our workers in other ways as well.
I'm right there with you.
Against any tariff. No matter what the circumstances.
I'm right there with you. But to steal, a line from Ross Perot, and I know that's going way back, to steal his idea of, okay, China, okay, Mexico, okay, Korea, we'll take the same deal you got.
Yeah.
We'll flip that around. Right. We'll take what you got, and we'll go forward. And they're not going to take that.
No. Reciprocity, again, I think this is something that Trump has a point. He's not the first one to make it, is that we have agreed for a variety of different reasons, one of which is there's too much corporate money in our politics. Another is obviously geopolitical. Some of it dates back to the Cold War and wanting countries to be in the U.S. sphere of influence rather than the Soviet sphere of influence. Whatever the reason, we negotiated a lot of deals that weren't in the interests of American workers. We need to revisit that. And again, I don't believe in America alone. I don't believe in in the traditional America first sense. But I do think that we've been foolish not to stand up for our businesses and workers, and that we should insist on a better deal. There's a lot of other work that we need to do. We need to pass infrastructure. We need to make sure we have Buy America requirements. We need to make sure we have a good system of workforce training. We need to give workers a better voice. All of that will help us be more competitive. But trade policy is a key piece of that.
Good stuff. Scott, I appreciate the time. I know this is going to continue. I know the voices, the hair on fire, the sky is falling, people will continue. And as that happens, we'd love to have you come back and continue to help rally the base.
You bet, Rick. Be my pleasure. Have a great one.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. And, Scott hit on a really interesting point there. The Cold War era of, we go into all these foreign countries and we George Carlin had a great line on this. We'd go into these other countries and we'd blow some stuff up and then we'd whip a little industry on them. Because after all, U.S., that's the middle letters in the word industry. Interesting stuff. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.